This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I am visiting with two researchers, compilers, author of a new report, Eyes Wide Open, Ethical Risks and Research Collaboration with China. Glenn Tiffert, the research fellow at Hoover Institution, is head of the Project on China's Global Sharp Power. And Jeff Stoff is the founder of Redcliffe Enterprises, a veteran of the U.S. government for many years. Jeff, I turn to you for what is to be done, because you've worked through the details here. I read, for example, your research about papers published by CASEA-affiliated authors. Some of these papers can appear extremely benign. The one I seized on, and we talked earlier, detection of birds' nests in catenary based on improved retina net model, co-authored with some players in CASEA. Now, bird's nest caught my attention because it seems so out of step, but I could see how the Audubon Society could be fooled by this to think, oh, well, that's a good idea to know what bird's nest at the end of the year and did they return. And I do that on my lawn and forest here in Connecticut. I walk around and check on the bird's nests or the birdhouses that I put out. So in your compiling all of these research papers, you're very careful in saying this isn't determinative, this is indicative. Are these researchers aware, often, always, that they're connected in some fashion to human rights abuses that are ongoing, named as genocide by the U.S. government? Do they know it, Jeff?
That's a really good and difficult question to answer. It's hard to really peer into these institutes and understand what the researchers are doing. My speculation is there's a spectrum depending on the type of research they're doing. In other words, there are very likely a number of researchers that are just like our counterparts here that are trying. They're scientists. They're engineers. They want to solve a particular problem. Sometimes at theoretical levels, they're not thinking about or concerned with where this could potentially go or who would use it. They're neck deep in a particular problem set. That said, there are some of the literature that we surveyed that's in this paper are directly funded by public security organs of China, intended for mass surveillance. And so there are certainly, it would be naive for a researcher in China, if the project was funded by the Ministry of Public Security, that they didn't know that this was going to, or there's an interest in applying this to the public security apparatus. So I think it depends on the type of research being done. In the example that you just provided, you know, on this bird's nest, the reason why we included it is because it was part of a provincial government smart city infrastructure development thing. So it's a government and party run smart city apparatus, and these smart city capabilities are being used extensively for surveillance purposes.
John, I wonder if I could add on something to what Jeff said, and that is, you know, one of the challenges is that many of these technologies are not inherently benign or malign. They're neutral, and really the key question is who's using them and for what purpose. And so in China, the range of purposes is a little bit broader than would be done here. And, you know, our researchers, when they collaborate with folks in CASEA, nominally the project might be a really interesting technical question in the field of, say, computer vision or object detection. And that might have commercial applications in a U.S. context. It might have policing applications, it might have defense applications. But the way those applications play out in a Chinese context, in a different political system, with different values and different ranges of freedoms, can be quite different. And so the assumptions about what that research is and where it might lead would be very different, and we need to appreciate that. Take, for example, some of the research that we did, which indicated, you know, papers on problems in object detection and object tracking. Ostensibly, they were about, you know, analyzing motion of vehicles and crash detection. That could be described as a public safety problem. Unfortunately, we see that this research is funded by organs of the Chinese state or supported by organs of the Chinese state that have much broader mandates than that, that have surveillance mandates. And so for them, the ability to follow a vehicle from camera field to camera field across a city has very, very different implications. Some of these papers talk about being able to automatically, you know, automatically track individuals across large networks of cameras in a city. And we know from a public contract tender that surfaced a couple of weeks ago that a province advertised for one of these systems because they wanted to track journalists entering their province and identify them, who they were, and code them as red, yellow, or green so that they knew, are they going to meet with dissidents? Are they there to stir up trouble? Are they there to uncover anything that we don't want talked about in our tightly sanitized press? If they can automatically track those individuals and know who they're meeting with, I mean, it's chilling.
It's chilling and revelatory. So we turn now immediately to what is to be done. And I'll start with you, Glenn, because there's some terms of art here. What is the entity list at the Department of Commerce? What is to be done?
Right. So the entity list is a regulatory list of organizations that have been nominated there as part of a regulatory process. That essentially say, you know, we can't do, American firms can't do business with these companies, right? Or with these entities. And it's an ordinary aspect of compliance that you have to check against this entity list to make sure you're not doing business with those partners. And in fact, the size of the entity list has grown dramatically in the last 5 years as, you know, we keep adding more and more Chinese, but also Iranian, Russian, and other entities operate in ways that are inimical to U.S. values or U.S. interests, that trade in technologies of mass destruction, terrorist financing, things of that nature. And so enterprises get listed on the entity list, and it says it's essentially illegal for U.S. firms to do business with them. But that does not apply to academic research, because as a matter of national policy since 1985, we've had a policy that says if research is published openly and fundamental, then it's presumptively unrestricted. And so it's a free pass out of the entity list system. So the entity list really, it covers U.S. commercial enterprises interacting with partners like CASEA if they're on the list, but it doesn't cover U.S. universities, academic researchers yet.
Jeff, I come to the second recommendation, to review the funding that is extant in your think tank, in your university, in your conference. Would the National Lab for Pattern Recognition, NLPR, would that come up as a red flag? Are people well-educated enough to know that while it doesn't sound like CASEA, it's intimately involved there? Or is this a whole new glossary that needs to be learned by private enterprise?
It's the latter. There's been no, that I'm aware of, there's been no systematic cataloging of these institutions and these subordinate divisions, such as this national laboratory, where you look at what they're doing and their mission space and the type of research they're doing. And so even if it shows up as a partner on academic literature, if they're co-authoring research with U.S. academics, There would not necessarily be any particular flag, because the U.S. government and the private sector has not really cataloged these institutions and the concerning activities that they're engaged in.
And Jeff, I'll press you on this. Is there money for such a vetting or such a search? I mean, people have to be paid to discover these things, or at least provided some compensation. Does that exist in people's budgets to say, we've got to know whether CASEA is here?
My understanding is the only time any resources are really being deployed to do this type of due diligence, either in the academic context or the private sector, is if it's searching and doing compliance to ensure that they're abiding by the regulatory regime, and specifically what Glenn had mentioned, the export control regime. So it's really just checking, is a particular organization on the entity list that may require an export license or just a denial or restriction of trade. Beyond anything that's part of the regulatory regime, I'm not aware of any resources devoted by the government or the private sector to do this kind of systematic due diligence.
And Glenn, does civil society know of these things? Are there websites, or are there newsletters, are there presentations at conferences warning civil society that we're dealing with deliberately obfuscating entities in China that can link you to bad acting?
So there are pockets of knowledge. The human rights community is starting to do this. Some of the NGOs that work in this area are starting to document these things. Jeff and I are starting to do it too. But there is no go-to resource that comprehensively pulls these bits of information together in a way that is usable by the larger community yet. And this is the great challenge that we face, because government has tended to focus on the traditional challenges to national security, things like espionage and critical technologies, say nuclear technology, for example. Universities have tended to say that this space is not really our responsibility. We're only formally compelled to comply with, what's on the entity list, for example, in the export control regime. So if it's not on there, then it's not our problem either. And so there's this giant zone in the middle in which nobody has yet stepped up to define, to catalog. And that is the challenge right now. And part of what we're trying to do is build a coalition of partners across civil society, academics with the subject matter expertise. A lot of this is happening in Chinese language. You need to be able to read Chinese language. But beyond reading Chinese language, you need to have an understanding of the political system, the way the organizations are wired internally in China. To be able to put these pieces together in a way that makes sense. You've got to have certain technical understanding. In the case of Kaseya, you need to know a little bit about, say, brain science and artificial intelligence and the connections between those and computer vision. And so it really takes a broad community of people. We have those resources. It's knitting them together in a way that is functional. That's the challenge.
I'm speaking with Jeff Stoff and Glenn Tifford. They're the authors of a new publication from the Hoover Institution entitled Eyes Wide Open, Ethical Risks and Research Collaboration with China. So far, we've talked about Kaseya and its entities with artful names, Iris King, VizTech, Iris Star Technology, Waitrix. However, when we come back, these companies can link to well-known international global companies and more. And what does that mean about our markets? Is it too late for anybody who is an investor to deal with the fact that you're being connected unwittingly, inadvertently, until you read this report, to bad acting? I'm John Basham.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.